Hello and welcome to SolarWinds Tech Pod. I'm your host, Sean Sebring, and with me as always, my co-host, Crystal Taylor. Today, we're diving into the world of cybersecurity, a critical focus area for every organization, to help us unpack what it's like to work in security, how to get into the field, and what it means to lead with a security mindset. I'm joined by Chris Greer, Security Engineering Manager here at SolarWinds. Chris, thanks for being here with us. Can you tell a bit about yourself and kind of what led you into the security field?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. This is excited to be here. So basically, I came from a little bit of a strange background, if you will. I didn't go to to college or anything like that. You know, I started out as a musician. My band got signed as we were leaving high school, so we got some really great opportunities. Got to tour the world for 15 solid years. And then, I got a call one day that I was going to be a dad. So, I was like, okay, I need to be home. I want to see my daughter grow up. So I was like, what can I do to make a consistent income where, I'm still enjoying the work. Right. So always been into computers. My brother and I, used to build computers when we were younger for, not only for ourselves, but, for family and friends and stuff like that. So we were about 13 at the time. And, that was back when, you couldn't mail order parts. You had to go to computer shows and stuff like that. So that was part of the fun, right? Is going and walking around and seeing all the cool things and talking to people. So that was kind of like my first taste, right? In the world of computers. So, like I said, when I found out I was going to be a dad, I moved down to North Carolina, and was, scouring the market, looking for a job. And, I applied for a desktop position at Duke University in their IT department. And, shot in the dark, I was like, I don't have any background. They're never going to hire me, right? So lucky enough, they gave me the job. I ended up working there for 10 years. And that's really where I kind of cut my teeth, right? Learned how to do, to be part of a help desk. I learned how to troubleshoot systems. And then I really got into Casper, which is now Jamf, on the Mac side. And that's really where I found my deep interest in, in computers, right? So I basically ate, and breathed Casper and Jamf every day, went to all their, yearly meetings out in Minneapolis, got all their certifications that they had. That was just my thing, right? So, after Duke University, I got word from my brother that a small startup in Cary was hiring, looking for a Casper expert, a Jamf expert. They were called Samanage. So I applied to Samanage, got hired there. And that was my first taste at a startup company, right? Which was an amazing experience. Such a cool environment. I loved everyone I worked with there. And then I got to, just continue to grow my career, right? So I started out as help desk there, moved over to management, and then I got into IT operations. So I was running the whole kit and caboodle there, right? So I was doing, networking, I was doing, video conferencing, computer setups, all those kind of things. So really learned a lot there as well. And then, Sean, as you know, we were acquired by SolarWinds in 2019. So that's kind of how I made my way over to SolarWinds here. So started out IT in the IT department there. Worked with Joe Murray and Jonathan Henry in the systems team. And then I moved over to the identity and access management team with Jonathan and kind of helped him bootstrap that team and kind of get it started. So I worked there, for about two more years or so. And then I got word that Eric's team was looking for a SOC manager. Didn't really have much experience in security. So I was really interested in kind of getting my feet wet there, seeing what security was all about, and having a team to kind of work with and kind of build out the operations center there. So that's kind of how I ended up in security here. So it's been here on the SOC team for almost a year. Next month will be a year. So it's been a really interesting and exciting experience, to be honest with you. There's definitely never a dull moment in security.
I have so many questions just purely based on your story of your background.
Sure.
First of all, can we talk about how you just casually dropped that you're in a band that was signed right out of high school?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Dropped that.
Yeah, it was so crazy. So one of my best friends, Thomas, he was, we started the Catch 22 together. That's my band's name. We worked at a photo lab together. And it was crazy too, because it was, you know, a really crappy day outside. It was pouring rain. I was working, he wasn't. And that record company ended up sending us a fax written in Sharpie saying, "We love your demo tape, give us a call." And we're like, "No way, this is a joke. You know, who sends a fax first of all?" And then, you know, we look at the top of the, you know, the fax where they used to put where it came from, and it said Victory Records. And we were, you know, we looked into Victory Records and we're like, this is definitely a joke, because this is like a metal hardcore label. And this is not, you know, that's not what we play. So we were like, all right, let's just give them a call, see what it's all about. And it ended up being real, believe it or not. And we were just, you know, we were floored. We're all 17 years old and, you know, running around just screaming because we're so excited that we got, you know, an offer to play music, right? You know, to the, you know, to the somewhat disappointment for a while from my parents, because they really wanted me to go to school really badly. So I would call home, you know, when we were on tour, and they're like, "How were the shows?" I was like, "Well, wasn't all that great. We played to the bartender, but I'm in, you know, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona today. And then tomorrow I'll be in, you know, I'll be in San Diego. So, you know, I'm seeing the country." And they're like, "You know, you sure you don't want to come home? You sure you don't want to go back to school? It's going to be really good for you." And I was like, "No way. Let's play music forever."
Well, I kind of want to twist this into a question about how this helps you, but, I think that, A, I want to say it's nice to talk to another person who doesn't have a formal educational background in a strong position in IT. Like, there is kind of a stigma where it's, like, required in a lot of cases. And we've talked about this on the podcast before about how, and I actually wrote a bunch of articles recently about how AI is making this even harder, is that recruiters look for degrees. And so it's kind of hard to get those differing experiences. So I'm really glad that you shared so much about your background with us today, like, to kind of illustrate that. Anyone can learn, and you can, you just need the opportunity. But I want to ask you specifically, because your band's been brought up, and because I already asked a question about your band, do you think that your 10 years working in the music industry as an artist helped shape some of your experiences now as a SOC administrator or whatever? Like, does it play into your security role at all? Like, the experiences that you had before?
I think so, especially on the people side, right? Because when you're a musician, I mean, you don't have to talk to your fans, but that's kind of, you know, that's not really the nicest thing to do. So, I mean, you learn to talk to you know, a huge swath of different types of personalities, right? So you have, like, the super extroverted, the super introverted, like, the people who just, like, can't even say a word. They're just, like, in shock, like deer in headlights. And this is, like, you kind of learn how to kind of navigate that and, you know, make them feel comfortable without, because, you know, a lot of times they'll say, you know, "I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry." And it's just like, don't be sorry. Let's have a conversation. Let's chat. You know, you're here. You know, you came to see my band. Like, I'm here for you guys. Let's chat it up. You know, let's enjoy our time together, you know? So, you know, I think it's really important to be able to talk, especially when you're speaking to departments that aren't very technical, right? So it's like, you need to learn how to, you know, to talk to different types of, you know, like, say, like, sales or marketing that isn't, you know, they're not dealing with scripts and they're not dealing with JSON and stuff like that. So it's like, you know, being able to talk to anyone, I think, is a huge plus, no matter what, you know, position you're in.
Would you say you have a similar amount of fans being in security as you did in the band? I'm totally joking.
I would say no.
Yeah. No, but I 100% agree. I think, you know, people skills, and like Crystal said, we bring this up all the time, but, like, people skills are the most transferable and one of, if not the most crucial skill to any role, arguably, right? Being able to work with others, talk to others. And I like the way you kind of mentioned it, just because they're, you know, there's a diverse group of people that will have different skill sets. So being able to translate what you need to translate based on their level of understanding is, sure, is a big deal. One of my favorite things about the way you talked about your transitions is they all seemed pretty organic in nature. Not that you didn't pursue them, but that based on your interest, the opportunities became available. And then based off of your interest in the opportunity, upskilling yourself, which is a big thing in IT. And it kind of rings true with the quote unquote informal education of it, is that IT is still, I don't know that I believe there's a true formal education path for most of any IT field, security included in this case. So like the skills, I think frameworks are the closest that you could get to a scripted education for IT stuff. But for the most part, it's just, I'm interested in this. Let me go learn everything I can.
Right.
I would also say a lot of IT education material is a little bit more open source than other education paths. And again, we'll see what happens as AI continues to dominate education in the future. But yeah, as far as like the education for it goes, since you did lead with saying, you know, I didn't go to university, college, how did your education into these fields happen? Was it just Googling? Did you go for specific certs? Like, what helped you gain credibility, you know, some certifications along the way? What helped give you that as you moved into the roles and kept going up?
Sure. So kind of just what you just said, I like to call myself a cert dog. I love certifications. So basically what I did was I kind of looked at all the
shirt, by the way, now Chris, a cert dog.
It's a dog. Yeah. So, you know, I looked into the certifications and kind of, you know, saw what the basic certifications were, you know, A+, Network+, Security+, those types of certifications. And I kind of started there. Right. So I think that's kind of how I got my foot in the door at Duke there, because I had my A+ certification. I only had one. But I think that kind of, you know, showed them a little bit of initiative, because I had some more on my list there that I was working on. So I think, you know, I think going the certification route is a really great spot, especially if you're, you know, starting out in help desk, right? Because all those early certifications really help you kind of understand your role, understand how to troubleshoot and what to look for. And then, you know, it's also nice to have that certification on your resume, right? And LinkedIn, because, you know, a list of accomplishments is always, you know, satisfying, right? So, for me, certifications will always be a huge part of my career and kind of how I look at things. And kind of going back to where you said, like, I feel like when you're in a certain role in IT, you know, you're doing the day-to-day work, but you get to a point where you feel like you're ready for a new challenge or a new experience, right? And it's usually not, you know, within a week or two. It's usually, you know, after a year or two, you feel like you've really mastered your craft and you're ready to kind of just keep expanding. And that's kind of how I look at it, right? Is, you know, I kind of look around and see what jobs are available within the company, right? Like, because the thing I really love about SolarWinds is they really try and have internal transfers be a huge part of, you know, of movement in the company, right? So they're not just looking to hire out, you know, outside of the company. You know, if they have any internal candidates, they're always willing to kind of help them get into that role they're looking for if possible, right? Or at least have the opportunity to interview for it. So that's kind of how I jumped around SolarWinds, right? Is all my moves have been internal transfers. So it's been a really great experience with that.
I want to follow up on the certification bit. I want to quickly, just as a rebuttal to Sean's earlier statement that there's not really a formalized path, I think that is true if you can talk to a person and get like past the recruiter and the AI now that's in play for recruiters that they're looking for specific. Certifications are one way to get past a recruiter. Mm-hmm. Formalized education is another way to get past a recruiter. But if you are from an unorthodox background, and let's say you don't have a bunch of certifications, but you do have experience and knowledge gained in the field, like that's my background. I don't have any certifications active right now, actually. But I did have certifications at one point or another for certain things. But I think that it's important to note that, like, for people who have a more unorthodox background getting into any role in IT, but especially security, that certifications are a good way to go. And I did want to ask you about that specifically. So you have worked in like desktop IT as well as now working in security. How important do you think certifications are in either of those roles?
I think they're pretty important, right? I mean, you get a really good baseline for what the role is going to go to Encompass, right? You know, when I look at certifications and roles, you know, there's also a lot of networking, right? So kind of a little off topic, but, you know, especially in the security world, I mean, you go to DEF CON, you know, there's a lot of really great security conferences to go to where you can get your networking done. And that's kind of, you know, how you know, at least for me, that's kind of how you meet a lot of really great people and you get, you know, offered a lot of really cool opportunities. You know, you can't take them all, but it's also, you know, nice to know that they're out there and that they're not unobtainable, if you will. You just kind of got to put a little bit of legwork in and usually, you know, it works out in the end there.
I appreciate that. Crystal, keep me in check when I lead us astray from the clear path. No, I like that the way you kind of phrase that, Crystal. The, you know, if you talk to somebody, they can give you a nice path, right? So there definitely is. And that's kind of one of the reasons we like these episodes, just say, Chris, what was your path, right? Because that unorthodox path, meaning rock star path, you could actually go find the rock star path to it if you look at Chris's LinkedIn now. But so you can definitely make a path out of it. Just another observation, because, you know, before we dive into more about what is the security role to you today, I really do just like talking about how you got there, and things that stood out in the conversation were interest. You said interest so many times. So like there's a phrase that rings true to me as a manager also when interviewing folks. It's will before skill. So, you know, is the interest there? Is the will there? And right, especially if you can show in your past that you're able to be adaptable, that will is there. It's like, hey, I have the interest for this now, right? So that's just much more attractive to someone saying, look, if their interest changed to this, look how quickly and incapable they were of, you know, transitioning to that other obscure role that's different than what they were doing before. So the level of interest, it seems like was one of your biggest benefits, just genuinely being interested in the next technology area of focus.
Yeah, and that, you know, I feel like when you're interested in something, you're more willing to put the work in, right? Like if you're doing something you have no interest in, it's really hard to be motivated to want to do it, right? So, I think that you made a really good point there, Sean.
Sean's a manager of people, and I formerly managed a team. And I'll say that as in a management role, I would much rather have someone who's enthusiastic and interested in what we're doing than have to painstakingly drag it out of someone or just get like the bare minimum. So in those hiring roles and things like that, if you're in a hiring role out there, consider when you're talking to, when you're doing your interviews, consider gauging your level of interest and enthusiasm, because that can be more valuable in a lot of ways than just straight flat background experience, I think.
Right. Right. And we all have, you know, parts of our jobs that aren't the most fun, but you got to do them. But as long as that's not, you know, 95% of your day, then I think you're doing it right, you know?
So one of your first roles kind of transitioned you into, I suppose your first role out of working with Duke, you mentioned at the startup Samanage, which is actually how we met over 6 years ago at this point now. And you moved into, you know, the IT operations management space there, which Chris also gave me my first MacBook, which was fun. You know, he mentioned his interest.
Wow, you're a Mac user? That explains so much about you.
With Mac. So how would you, let's first talk about like the culture of that role being in kind of, I suppose it's going to be a little bit difficult as well, because you mentioned it was a startup and startups themselves have a different culture about them, but doing your best to separate startup versus, you know, large organization that's established, IT operations itself versus security. I'm kind of curious, like, let's start there and then just speak about the transition, because you said this is about a year in now, just over maybe, to transition to security. Would you, I'm curious about the bigger differences between just IT operations versus being in security.
Sure. Yeah. I think the biggest thing, you know, is kind of the mindset change, right? Like proactive versus reactive mindset, right? And so, you know, in IT and help desk, you're way more reactive. You know, you've got a machine down or a server down. You know, downtime is the enemy in help desk and IT. So you're looking to resolve whatever issue you have as fast as possible. But in security, you know, you got to kind of take a step back a little bit and slow down, because it's not all about speed, right? You got to understand, you know, where the threat's coming from, what they're attacking, and how to prevent it in the future. So I think that's the two of the biggest things there. And sometimes it's a little hard to slow down, right? Because you get used to that cadence of, you know, all right, let's knock this out, let's get it done. You know, and sometimes, you know, in security investigations, you know, they'll take a day, they'll take 2 days, they'll take 3 days to really understand, you know, what was going on and, you know, the things you need to put in place to prevent that from happening again.
Are there any similarities between doing a security investigation and doing like root cause analysis on the IT side?
Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, in a root cause RCA, you need to understand why it happened and, you know, how to prevent it. Right. So during the investigation, you're all about trying to find out who they are, what they're doing. And then once you establish that, you can kind of, how do we prevent this from happening in the future? So that kind of completes that final step of the RCA there.
I like that comparison, because it showcases that if they're not that different. I think that working in an IT role and working with a lot of people in, you know, server administration, network administration, whatever, you can get security has a reputation in most places of being sort of an impediment, or, you know, there's a lot of conversations about red tape, or basically that it feels like they're making the process harder than it needs to be.
Sure.
And having had conversations here with Josh Van Hoos, I know that not everybody in security is trying to do. I'm sure there are people out there that live to say no. I used to be the subject matter expert for a specific product that was very black and white and didn't have a lot of customization. And I lived to say no, it can't do that. I loved it. I would get called in by my engineers to tell people no, because they couldn't tell people.
Yeah.
Tell people. And I'm like, you got it, I'm on it.
Crystal.
And I think it's like, yeah. For me, it was like a break from the normal, because all the other things we worked with were super customized. And so you couldn't just say no, like there was a possibility that you could do that thing. So having something like be able so I could just be like, nope, can't do it, it's not a thing, was like a break from the normal. But I think there's probably some personality aspects there in security that maybe relish being able to tell people no, that they can't do things.
Yeah.
But to get back to the point, it's nice to have these kind of comparisons of like kind of tool sets or skill sets that are transferable between a normal, you know, a regular IT role and like specifically a security role, because security in general can seem very intimidating to try and move into, because it seems like, and I don't know if this is just a reputational thing or like, or what, but like, it seems like there's kind of an unspoken barrier to entry into security, and like, they're not looking for a lot of like junior roles or people that are outside of security skill sets. And so like being able to compare skills gained in both places, I think is really helpful. And I wanted to know more about your transition between the two roles. Like, how many things did you take from your former, you know, desktop security role or desktop support role, sorry, into your security role? How much of that is like transferable, I guess?
Sure. I think they cross a lot, right? Because in desktop, you know, you're doing, especially in IT and systems work, you know, you're into the networks, right? You're into the firewalls, you're into the servers. So a lot of those things transfer over, because, you know, when you get an investigation, you're looking at IP addresses, you're looking at, you know, where they're coming in from, you're looking at the logs in Azure or wherever, whatever tool you're using. And that's kind of, you know, a lot of the same thing when you're troubleshooting in IT. You do have to look at the logs and see where those errors are, right? And, you know, see how you could, you know, reconcile those and get your system up and running again. So, you know, that solid troubleshooting skill set is really important. And really, no matter what role you're in IT, but, you know, it definitely transfers over to security as well.
One thing I'm curious about is, two things actually, but let's start with this one. So your role, your title is security engineering manager. Mm-hmm. Can you break down the engineering part of that? What's unique about the security engineering part versus maybe just a generic security title? Is there anything that's unique about your specific role in security being security engineering?
As far as the engineering title part, I think that's more company based.
Okay.
You know, the guys on my team are definitely engineers, right?
Sure.
I don't know if I would consider myself an engineer. I feel that, you know, especially, you know, at my time in the SOC. But, you know, those guys are writing queries, they're writing scripts, they're writing, you know, custom alerting, you know, based off of, you know, what the business needs are. So, you know, those guys are definitely engineers, right? But for me personally, as a manager, you know, that was a different transition on itself, right? Because, you know, I was an individual contributor. So, I was a lead engineer on the IAM team. So I was doing that work myself, you know. Now it's more delegation, helping my team, you know, grow their careers, you know, making, you know, solid decisions for the SOC and security as a whole. So it's a little different mindset. But as far as the engineering part for the analysts and, you know, that we have the engineers on our team, those guys are definitely engineers for sure.
And it's not a big deal, but I just have to ask, cause you know, especially in, let's be honest, sales where I'm at, everyone's got manager in their title when they're not a people manager. So I wanted to clarify, did engineering have anything unique about that? Cause you know, on the op side, engineering is used a lot. And I get both as well, right? Even though I'm not an engineer.
Right.
You know, I suppose, you know, you. Anyway, so you perfectly pitched me up for the second part of my question, which was about that mindset differentiation, right? So I would say that with personal experience, having managed before, managing now, that those characteristics, those traits, right, being a people leader in itself is the most important part, because you said, you know, career growth, helping, you know, remove barricades for your employees, right? Helping make sure they can do their jobs better and that they feel like they have a career path, they're, you know, nurtured. Right. That's more important than the field that it's particularly in. So you being transitioned over there straight into a leadership position, you know, you already had some of that management background. You were ready to do that and take those management skills, but you were learning security at the same time.
Right.
Having done that, you kind of already said a little bit about it, but I want to expand on it. What is the difference in your mindset as a leader as well? Not just the people part, but as a security leader, helping to try and motivate them or steer them in a, you know, to get their jobs done or look at a bigger picture. What's different in your perspective as the security leader versus the security practitioner? Not saying you don't practice as well. Sure. Right? Do you understand where I'm going with that? Like you have to have maybe a bigger picture idea of it. Whereas, you know, the individual practitioner might have a single lane focus.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. You know, to play off what you're saying is, you know, when you get an investigation, that's where the IC comes in, right? And you know, they're focused on that investigation. They're focused on closing out. As far as management goes, you know, I really try to let the engineers and my team do that work. I don't need to go in there. I mean, they're the experts, right? Like I am not. So I don't want to go in there and muddy up what they're trying to do. You know, I basically sit back and watch what they do. So I'm understanding what they do. But I really don't think it's my place to get my hands in all of that, you know? So I try to give them the freedom to kind of do their investigations. I am not a micromanager. So if you're able to work on your own without, you know, much influence from me, that's my perfect team, right? You know, I want to be able to trust my guys or girls or women or whoever's on my team to do their job and not have to go behind them every time and just to make sure they're closing things out correctly or they're doing the investigations right. So I think, you know, as a manager, I try to foster that environment, right? So I want to make them, you know that they're valued, right? The work that they're doing is good work. And then basically my role is to report the great work they're doing up to leadership, right? So I'm kind of that middleman between, you know, the CISO and my team. Basically, my end goal, kind of like you said, is to, you know, grow their careers, you know, advance the security program and make it tighter, because there's always improvements to make, right? So, you know, if I'm able to fulfill the requirements that the business needs have, as well as develop my team, then, you know, I feel like I'm in a pretty good spot and kind of doing the role where it needs to be.
We talked a little bit about people skills earlier and how important those are to really any role. But in your role now, if you're kind of interacting directly with the CISO, between your team and the CISO, like how, I guess you have any advice for kind of those kinds of interactions where you're sharing concerns from your team to the CISO and vice versa, right? Like how does that interaction work and how much of your people skills are brought into play, I guess, for those kinds of interactions? Like, is there any, I don't know, people might find the CISO to be not our CISO. He's wonderful. I love him. Genuinely, he's like the nicest person in the world. But he is. But a lot of people can find interacting with that level of person in the company to be very intimidating. And so, like, I guess, do you have any advice on kind of handling that business interaction and your, you know, managing and maintaining your team's expectations between yourself and the CISO?
Sure. So the way I kind of approach, you know, speaking to leadership and executive level leaders is they're normal people, right? They, you know, they're a human being. Just because their title is nice and high and it has a C in front of it, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, they're going to be some like terrifying person or a terrible person you can't talk to, or you only get 2 seconds and then you're cut off kind of thing. So I always just approach it as just a normal person. You know, I probably wouldn't say dude or bro to Tim, but, you know, but, you know, just talking like we're talking now. And, you know, as long as you have, you know, what you need to talk about laid out and you're not, you know, you're not wasting his time, if you will. You know, it's just a normal interaction, just like any other person. So that's kind of how I kind of go into those discussions. And, you know, with my team, you know, I kind of approach it the same way, right? It's, you know, I may have a manager title, but I'm part of your team. And, you know, everyone's success relies on everybody in the team. It's not just me. It's not just one engineer. So like, if we're all not jiving with each other, then we need to figure out, you know, how to make it better if that, you know, if something arises like that. But, you know, I think if you treat people like humans, then, you know, you're 80% of the way there already.
Gotta love humans, I guess. Just kind of an off the wall one, but it, you know, I think it fits well with our conversation so far, because you've got a really cool tool belt of diverse IT skills. Having moved into security, what's like a underrated or a unique skill, maybe even it doesn't have to be unique, but something that you say, you know, that's a really good one for security.
Patience.
What's a good skill you would say? Yeah.
Patience for sure.
Patience.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, you know, kind of like we were speaking about before, you know, a lot of times people want to get things done as fast as possible, right?
Yeah.
And it can be frustrating when it takes some time, especially if the, you know, the, you know, the threat actors are sneaky. And there's a lot of really good threat actors out there.
Yeah.
So you really got to, you know, dig in and take your time and make sure that you're looking at everything that needs to be looked at and, you know, you're not missing anything. So for me, patience is definitely up there. And then perseverance, I guess you could throw in there as well.
I love that they were not technical skills.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
All those things you learn on the job, right? You learn how to dig in, yeah. You learn how to look for certain things, right? But, you know, it's the other skills that are harder to teach, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even just reacting well in a crisis, I feel like, especially in a security role, you might be, if you were a person that was maybe prone to panic, would maybe not be a good fit for you, because stuff is always happening or there's people getting in the way or trying to subvert processes. And actually, I do want to pivot us a little bit to that kind of question, right? I brought up earlier that a lot of IT folks see security as kind of an impediment, and they will, if possible, subvert security expectations every time, in my experience, in order to get what they need done. And some of that, I think, comes from this unnecessary, what is the word I'm thinking of? Basically, like, everything is important to be done right now, this unnecessary rush of like, oh, well, the boss man said it, so we got to do it right now.
Yeah.
And then also from that attitude of they expect to have administrator level access. And last time Josh said something, which was that the first thing that he learned moving to security was that you don't have administrator access anymore and you don't need it. So I think that that is like that was a curveball to realize, oh, wait a minute, you don't have that. So I think that my question really is, what kind of interactions do you have to have on a regular basis or a semi-regular basis with people who are trying to subvert processes? And what does that do for the processes that you guys are creating? Like, how does that whole interplay kind of go?
Yeah, sure. You know, since we're scanning everything, right? You know, I think people are caught off guard a little bit sometimes when we do reach out to them because, you know, they're like, how do you know what I'm doing? It's kind of our job to know that. So that's how we know. But
big brother.
Yeah, no, a lot of times, you know, things are just done out of, you know, like you said, just trying to get things done. Right. So sometimes you kind of, you know, take a little nudge around the rules just to kind of get things done sometimes. And, you know, that's where we step in because we'll get the alert and then we need to follow up and do that investigation. So sometimes we make a little bit more work for people. So I apologize for that. You know, in the end, we're just trying to make sure that, you know, everything that needs to stay secure, stays secure, you know, that it's not out in the open. So, you know, we deal with, you know, some key leaks here and there, not external leaks, but just, you know, posted in like a Teams channel or something like that, you know, which is not something you really should be doing. So that's kind of when we'll reach out and, you know, we'll get a little pushback sometimes, but once we have a call with whoever, it is or the team, you know, they get where we're coming from, and they understand why we're reaching out and asking what we're asking for. So, you know, in the end, you know, everyone is pretty compliant and pretty friendly. I think just that initial message kind of maybe, you know, catches them off guard and could set the wrong tone sometimes if it's not done the right way.
Based on your conversation earlier, I don't remember if you moved into security when you were still at Samanage when it was a startup, but I do have a follow-up question, which is based on this kind of subversion of processes, there are some differences between like a large corporate culture and a startup culture. And that startup culture requires people to move fast and make changes very quickly, which means that people are maybe even more prone to kind of subverting processes or there not being processes even in place. So I guess, what do you think the differences are in dealing with security in these two types of like companies and IT, which is like the two main things going on?
Sure. So, so in a startup, it's usually a very, very small team in IT as general, right? So, I was doing IT operations, it was, myself and a team member and we did everything IT, right? So it was the whole gambit. In a bigger company, you have different departments, right? You have systems, you have security. So, you know, you have people that are specifically looking for certain things or working on certain things. So, you know, I think in the startup, it's really reliant on who is in charge of that IT department and how they set up permissions, right? Going back to what you were saying about admin rights, everyone wants admin rights all the time. And it's just not, you know, it's not possible, right? So, you know, you need to restrict that, which causes a little bit of pain points here and there, because, you know, they're frustrated, they can't do what they need to do. But, you know, something I always explain to people was, you know, listen, it's a 2-man IT team. So to have, you know, 200 people have all admin rights and be able to have, you know, it's like the Wild West and it's just impossible to keep everyone secure as well as the business. So, you know, moving over to, you know, it was like SolarWinds and a larger company, it's really nice to have those separated teams that focus on things. One thing we're trying to do is we're trying to break down those silos and have all these, you know, IT departments work as one. It's called Cyber Fusion. So that's something that the SOC team has been working on. So myself and Harry Griffiths, we're in phase two of that program. So we're gonna start developing that a little bit more and hopefully making security just part of daily life rather than, oh no, I clicked on a phishing email kind of thing.
So I guess this will be pivoting, but it wouldn't be a tech pod episode if we didn't bring up AI and exhaust it a little bit. But I want to approach it a little differently, and it's not talking about using AI. Instead, I want to talk to you about from the security mindset of what kind of risk it poses to the employee using it, right? So you mentioned earlier, and I like the ominous statement, that's my job to know what you're doing, right? So let's say an average Joe like myself is using an AI through, you know, a browser. What are the primary concerns that security would have in your everyday person, be they in sales, finance, right? Any business operation department using an AI tool, because it's almost part of everyone's everyday job now that they use it just as an assistant tool. Sure. What kind of threats or concerns does the security team have? And I suppose small opportunity for you to give guidance on how to best use it.
Yeah, sure. So talking about AI, you know, there's a bunch of different options out there. I think one of the most important things is that if you are going to use AI, one that we use Copilot here at SolarWinds, right? So that's an authorized AI client. So if you need to use AI, try and use Copilot. You know, if you're using ChatGPT or OpenAI or whatever, don't put any sensitive information in there, right? If you needed to help writing an email, totally cool. You know, if you wanted to write code for one of our products, probably not the best spot to do it. We will get an alert for that, and we will reach out to the user. So we do monitor all those channels to make sure that, you know, we're not having that out in the open. You know, I kind of look at it as like, you know, don't put anything in there that you don't want getting out, right? So like, I think that's the best way to look at it. Like if you're putting something in there, you know, you shouldn't be putting in there, don't do it. It's not worth it. Because, you know, there's no security as far as they're concerned, right? They use everything you type in there to machine learn and get better at what they're doing. And a lot of times too, I've seen it, you know, just messing around with it myself, just trying to learn JQL. It'll give you bad code too. So, I mean, if you're trying to put it in, you know, in a product, you could just hose the product itself because you're putting in code that doesn't actually work.
That happened not that long ago. Yeah. It was a big deal in the media where some one person decided that he was going to do a whole company by himself and he had AI write his product and then he couldn't fix it.
Yep. Yeah. And then you're so hosed, right? There's nothing you could do.
Yep. Yep. That's really good. I'm going to pivot us again because we're getting kind of close to the end of our time together. I want to ask about security's portrayal in media. And this is a two-part question. How did that affect your own impression before you moved to security? Like, did it influence your decision to move into security at all? And then I have a follow-up for also.
Sure. Full disclosure, when I moved over to security, I knew a little bit about security just, you know, from my past roles. But as far as like the security alerts and all that stuff, I really didn't look into it much until I joined the team and really kind of got my feet wet. But I will say, I have a feeling what your follow-up question is, and this may or may not lead into that, but if you look at all those security advisors, the world's on fire, basically. There's so many threats out there. It's like the most paranoid feeling in the entire world, right? You feel like you're never safe. There's always someone trying to get at you. There's always someone trying to steal something from you, which I guess in theory, in a way, is true in a little bit. But for the most part, it's not like the earth is a huge dumpster fire and everything is, you know, security related. But, you know, all those advisors are also really important for us as a security team, because that kind of helps us, you know, be aware of what's out there and, you know, to make sure that we're keeping eyes on, you know, our eyes on things.
Yeah, I think that's not my follow-up question, but I'll get into it a second. I think that the portrayal in media generally for anything IT is usually kind of laughable. So security is no different, but like, you know, you think about like hacking and then they're all like, it's insane. And so like, it doesn't make any sense, but I'm sure it influences someone out there of like, oh, hacking looks so cool. Like just the movie Hackers.
Well, I was just
like,
about to mention
hacking
that.
Is so cool. You think about things like War Games and like these classic tech movies that like really probably influenced people's ideas of what it was going to be like. Yeah. It's not like that at all. But what I was going to say is, do you think that the portrayal of security in popular media affects how users interact with the security team?
That's a good question. That I'm not too sure of, to be honest with you. Going back to hackers, like, it'd be really cool if you're hacking something, all like, you know, pops out and the words start flying around on the sky in front of your eyes. I mean, that'd be pretty cool, but, you know, hack the planet type stuff. But, I think it's really based, you know, on a person to person basis, right? You know, some people could read those things and, you know, just be like, all right, cool, here's what's out there. You know, this looks interesting. Or, you know, like I said before, kind of like get super paranoid about it and kind of like, you know, disconnect everything offline, reformat their phones a couple of times, all that kind of stuff. But I think if like DEF CON and stuff like that was more visual for, like, you know, quote unquote, like normal people or like outside of the security world, I think they would find it's pretty interesting. It's pretty amazing what these guys and women could do. They're so smart. It's just incredible, like, how they can kind of, you know, just hack into something and just follow that wormhole down and just get in there. And, you know, it's really, really amazing.
I do think, just following up on that, I do think that, like, CISA has done a good job in the last few years of becoming a bit more visible about what they work on and what they're doing. So I'm with you. For the average person, like, I'm not insecurity. I don't know enough about it. I'm enthusiastic about it in the sense of, like, helping normal people be a little bit more secure, but not in the, like, I'm going to go work in the security team type of way.
Come on, why not?
I'd have to learn quite a bit for that. And I don't know, maybe one day I'll switch into it, because that's my favorite thing about IT, is that there's always something new to learn, always something new to do. And true. You mentioned it earlier, like, you found a new interest and so then you went into it. I operate very similarly, where I just do a thing until I'm bored of that thing and then I go learn something else.
Yeah.
Because we can.
Right.
But, like, I have, you mentioned earlier, like, that, you know, you could get really paranoid watching all of the media and, like, oh, everyone's out to get us all the time. I do think that there's, like, a certain level of that that's necessary to have, like, personal risk aversion. I finally, just as an aside, I finally have convinced my mom to be more secure with her phone and with her jobs and stuff, like her job applications and things. Twice now in the last year, she's applied for jobs, done interviews, and they turned out to be fraud. So, like,
no way.
Yeah, they sent her a check for, like, computer equipment. They were work from home jobs, so watch out, y'all. But they sent her a check for computer equipment, and then she was suspicious, and so she called the bank that it was supposed to be from, and the bank was like, "We're investigating."
Oh, no way. That's
the
crazy.
FBI is already involved. It was like a whole thing. Anyway, but she used to say years ago, why would anyone steal anything from me? I don't have anything worth stealing. And I think that that is a crazy attitude that, like, the bulk of the human populace has, like, the people who aren't involved in IT, or your parents or whatever, like, oh, I don't have anything worth stealing. I'm not a millionaire. And that's just not true. Like, the value of data is so large, and I finally have impressed it upon my mom. Mm-hmm. She's become more secure. Like, just some more, don't click on everything that you see.
Right.
You just need some help. So does, like, you working in security now, like, from having been in IT and all that, does it influence your personal relations as well in the same way of, like, oh, you guys, come on, you got to watch out for this thing or whatever? Does it influence your relationships at all?
Oh, for sure. My daughter is the worst with passwords. So when I got onto the security team and started really, really digging in, kind of like I mentioned before, you know, you get really paranoid. So I got paranoid, cause I was like, I need to make sure my family is, like, locked down. I need to make sure my network is locked down. Like, I didn't, you know, I wasn't aware of all the little intricacies that, you know, these hackers do. So learning about that, it definitely made my security footprint at home, and, you know, device wise, way better. I went and made sure everyone changed the passwords and they weren't reusing the password 1,000 times. And kind of going back to what you said as well with my mom, right? Cause she has, like, 5 devices for no reason, and they all have different email accounts on them. And, you know, she stores passwords here and there. And I'm just like, this is the worst thing you possibly could do. So, you know, I'm trying to help her as well. Like, so she's come a little bit of, you know, a little way, but, you know, she still has a long way to go. But it definitely influences, you know, how I look at security and my own personal stuff as well.
Yeah, it's a good, a good topic for us to kind of close on that, you know, we brought it from your career, your journey, bringing in, you know, how we observe and view security through work, and then how it actually relates back into home life, you know, in your personal life as well. And Chris, I really like what you said is that you think you're not valuable to someone who wants your information, but you are, right? So you don't have to be paranoid, but you should probably take it a little more seriously than you give yourself credit for, right? But great stuff. Well, thank you, Chris, for giving us an inside look at the world of cybersecurity and what it really takes to succeed in this critical and constantly evolving field. Whether already in tech or just curious about making the jump into security, we hope today's convo was really valuable and give you some perspective. So, Chris, I really want to thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me. This is great. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and thank you, listeners, for joining us on another episode of SolarWinds Tech Pod. I'm your host, Sean Sebring, joined, as always, by Crystal Taylor. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe and follow for more tech pod content. Thanks for tuning in.